Okay, good morning, everyone. So today we're going to be discussing Inyone Diyuma, and that is the halachic mitzvah of the counting of the Omer. Again, as I warn you, this is not inspirational. This is kind of technical and halachic and a little bit of lumdus. So I hope that'll be okay for you. Other shiur might move in different directions. First, in order to understand exactly what the counting of the Omer is, we need to know what is the Omer. So an Omer is simply a measure, like a bushel. Technically, the halachic definition of an Omer, like a bushel, like a gallon, it's a measure of volume, is a tenth of an epha. And a tenth of an epha, in modern terms, is the volume of 43 1/5 eggs, right? The volume of that. And the significance of Omer is, number one, it was the quantity that was brought as the Korban Omer, you'll see in a moment. It is also, Bizman Hazeh, the amount of dough, of flour rather, that is Chayav in Chala. And the machloka says, how do you translate that? Are the eggs bigger today or smaller today? So that's why you got the issue of between 2.5 and 5 is a sapek bracha, and only at 5 pounds is it a vaday bracha. But the share of challah is 43 1/5 eggs. It is also the volume of man that fell in the desert every single day. So it was the share of the man, it is the share of the challah, and it is the shiur of the Omer, of the Korban Omer. So what is the Korban Omer? On the second day of Pesach, which of course in Eretz Yisrael is Chol HaMoed, a meal offering, a mincha, was brought from one Omer of finely sifted barley flour, in which the Kohen would take a kamitza, kind of a fistful of that flour, mixed with oil, have it burnt on the Mizbeach, and like every mincha basically, and the rest of the Omer would be baked as matzah, of course, it's Pesach, it's matzah, and would be eaten by the Kohanim. So this is a meal offering, and the meal offering is called the Korban HaOmer, and the Torah says that the Korban HaOmer must be brought Mimacharas HaShabbos, the day following Shabbos, and for reasons we'll discuss a little later, Shabbos in that verse does not mean Saturday, but Shabbos means the Yom Tov of Pesach, which is day one, the 15th of Nisan. So Mimacharas HaShabbos is the 16th of Nisan. So one of the korbanos, it wasn't the only korban, one of the korbanos that was brought on the second day of Pesach was the korban HaOmer. Now, the Korban HaOmer has a very, very important function in halacha that is not even connected to Pesach. And that is, the Torah says chadash. Chadash means grain of the new year, the new grain. Now, by grain, I mean the 5 minei dagan. I don't mean rice. I don't mean buckwheat. I don't mean quinoa. But essentially, the 5 grains that could become chametz, that's wheat, barley, spelt, rye, and oats, right? The grains that you make a mezonos on in an alamichia, or you bench if it's bread. So the Torah says the chadash is prohibited to eat until the korban haomer is brought. So one could not eat the new grain until the Korban HaOmer is brought, right? So the Omer is a matir. It takes off what is called the Iser of Chadash. Now, today, we unfortunately do not yet have a Beis HaMikdash. We do not have the Korban HaOmer. So what takes off the Isser of Chadash, Bizman Hazeh? So the Gemara actually has a drasha, and the drasha is, when there's a Beis HaMikdash, the chadash is usher until you bring the korban einer. When there's no Beis HaMikdash, the chadash is usher, doraisa, until the beginning of the day that you would bring the korban haomer. Now, the day that you would bring the korban haomer is, of course, the 16th of Nisan. So when there's no Beis HaMikdash, the dawn of the 16th of Nisan will matir chadash, and you would not be allowed to eat chadash until the morning of the 16th of Nisan. So the Isser chadash is still here, but the Isser of chadash bizman hazeh would become mutter del raisa with the dawn of the 16th of Nisan. Now let me just add that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, shortly after the Korban, made a slight modification of this rabbinically. And that is, instead of allowing you to eat it at the morning of the 16th of Nisan, he says you cannot eat the Chadash till the end of the 16th of Nisan, going into the 17th. In other words, he assered the entire day. The reason is because maybe the Beis HaMikdash is going to be rebuilt very speedily. And if we get used to eating the Omer the morning of the 16th, then we might come to do so even when we have a Beis HaMikdash. But once we have a Beis HaMikdash, you can't eat the Chadash till the Korban HaOmer is actually brought, which may be later in the day. So to be sure that we never get into the habit of eating the Chadash before the Korban HaOmer would be brought, he assered the whole 16th day, and you're not permitted until the 17th. In other words, going into the night. That is called Yom Hanaf. Hey, Nun, Fei, Sofit. Yom Hanaf means the day of waving, because before the Omer, the Kemitza was burnt on the Mizbeach, the Omer was lifted in front of the Mizbeach, and therefore the 16th of Nisan was given the name of Yom Hanaf. And one of the takanos of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai is that chadash is usher on the Yom Hanaf. So the bottom line is that the Isser of chadash is still an Isser d'iraisa. Bizman HaMikdash, chadash was not mutter until the bringing of the Omer. And Bizman HaZeh, on a Torah level, chadash is mutter the morning of the 16th of Nisan. And because of the takana of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, it is the whole Yom Hanaf still has an Isser of Chadash, so you're not allowed to eat Chadash until the 17th of Nisan when you enter the next day. Now, what is Chadash? What makes grain Chadash? What is Chadash grain and what is Yashan grain? So this is a very, very important principle. Even if the grain is harvested after Pesach, it is not called chadash if it took root before Pesach, which means the following. Obviously, grain that is planted before Pesach and took root in the ground, which is only a few days after planting, when the second day of Pesach comes, that will matir that grain. So even though it grew after Pesach and it was harvested after Pesach, it is not called chadash that belongs to the next year. It is called yashan, and it is mutter with the aymer or the 16th day for consumption. In other words, in order to be chadash, it essentially has to be grain that was planted after the Omer date. So if it was planted after the Omer date, it is chadash until the next Omer date, after which it'll become yashan, right? You understand? All chadash eventually becomes yashan. So consequently, one has to be very, very careful to determine whether something was planted before Pesach or something was planted after Pesach. Now, Now we're very shortly after Pesach. It's a Dover Pasha. Any grain product that hits the market is by definition Yashan, because it must have been planted before Pesach. In fact, it was probably harvested before Pesach. So between Pesach and Sukkot, you never really have a chadash problem, because all grain products on the market between Pesach and approximately Sukkot are from grains that were planted before Pesach. And as a result, they were covered by the Omer. Where you start getting a chadash problem is around after Sukkot. You might have had grain that was planted after Pesach and harvested in the summer or the early fall. So that technically is chadash grain, which is not going to be mutter until the Omer date of the next Pesach. Now, let me point out that in Eretz Yisrael, I'll talk about Chutz Laretz in a moment, in Eretz Yisrael, you don't have to worry about this problem unless you are a farmer yourself. Because any hashgacha on a product that is a reliable hashgacha, whether it's Badatz, whether it's a Reuben, whatever it is, whether it's Rabbanut, will only certify a grain product that is Yashan at the time that it comes to market. So you yourself do not have to ascertain when was the grain planted, when was the flour grain put into the ground, etc. So Chadash and Yashan are taken care of by the hashkacha itself. So it's not an issue you have to worry about. I will get to Chutz La'aretz in a little bit of a while. So once again, the Omer is not only a mitzvah of bringing a korban, the Omer was the matir of Chadash. Now let me point out that Pesach and Shavuot are both bracketed by a unique meal offering. On Pesach, the meal offering is Omer. And on Shavuos, there's a meal offering called Shtei Halechem, two loaves of bread. Now, just in terms of conceptualizing this, let me point out that there's some very significant differences between the Omer and the Shtei Halechem. Both of them are menachot. Difference number one, the Omer is barley, which is very unique because barley is normally not the grain that is used for the mincha. So the Omer is barley. The Shtei Halechem is wheat. We'll come back to that. Number two, the Omer must be baked as unleavened bread, as matzah, and the Shtei Halechem was chametz. Now, your first reaction might be, well, that's pashut. The Omer has to be matzah and not chametz because it's Pesach. But that's actually not the reason. In truth, all menachot, even during the year, normally have to be matzah. So the fact that the Omer is matzah is actually not a unique phenomenon. What is unique is that the Shtei Halechem is chametz, and I'll get to that. In other words, the Omer being matzah is not because it's Pesach, although that may be a reason as well. The Omer being matzah is because menachot in the Beis HaMikdash were normally matzah. Shtei Halechem is an exception. So in a sense, it's an interesting reversal here, because on one hand, the barley of the Omer is unique. The wheat of the Shtei Halechem is normal. On the other hand, the matzah of the Omer is normal, and the chametz of the Shtei Halechem is unique. Right, so that's the second difference. The third difference is that the Omer is not baked until after the portion is burnt on the Mizbeach, meaning the Kohen takes the flour and the oil, a fistful, it's burnt on the Mizbeach as flour mixed with oil, and then and only then are the Shirayim baked and eaten by the Kohanim, as opposed to the Shtei Halechem, which is baked at the time that you're bringing it to the Mizbeach. So that's a third difference. The fourth difference is, interestingly enough, that the shtei halechem only has tenufa. You wave it, the kohen waves it, lifts it up and down, back and forth, but then it is eaten 100%. There is no chelek that goes on the mizbeach, unlike the omer, which after there is a kamitza that is burnt on the mizbeach, and the rest is eaten by the kohanim. So in many ways, the shtei halechem is actually not even korban in the sense that no part of it is burnt on the mizbeach, but it is called a korban because it is brought to the mizbeach and the kohen lifts it up and down, forward, back, and then it is ne'achal by the kohanim 100%. So the Pesach Shavuos is bracketed by two different grain offerings. The offering of the Omer on the second day of Pesach and the offering of the Shnei Halechem on Shavuos. Now, the same way that the Omer served a function, that it permitted the consumption of Chadash, the Shtei Halechem also serves a similar function in the following way. As soon as the Omer is brought on the second day of Pesach, I am now allowed to eat Chadash. Which means, actually, if you want to be technically correct, the Chadash now becomes Yashan, right? So it's a matter of semantics. We often explain it, we often describe it as the Omer takes off the Yisr of Chadash, or another way of saying it is, the Chadash now becomes Yashan. Okay, it's the same thing, just two different ways of saying it. But here is the thing. Even after the Isser of Chadash has been taken off, that is only true for human private consumption. But meal offerings in the Beis HaMikdash must still be brought from last year's grain until the Shtei HaLechem of Shavuos. So the Omer, so the way the Mishnah describes it is, the Omer matirs chadash ba'medina. The Omer takes off the Isser of Chadash for your consumption in the Medina, in the country. The Shtei Alechem takes off the Isser of Chadash ba'mikdash. Meaning, until Shavuos, you're not allowed to bring a meal offering from the grain of that new year, only from the grain of the old year. So both of them are matirim. The Omer matirs chadash ba'medina, and the Shnei Alechem matirs chadash ba'mikdash. Now, there's a very, very important machlekes in the Gemara. Normally, we would assume that the Isser of chadash can only apply to grain that grows in Eretz Yisrael. After all, a mitzvah that is connected to agriculture, to produce, is what Chazal term a mitzvah tuluya ba'aretz, a mitzvah that depends on the land. And what is the famous klal that Chazal told us many times? Mitzvos tuluyos ba'aretz are only nohagos ba'aretz and not in chutz la'aretz. So, for example, Truma and Maiser and Shemitah only apply in the land of Israel. Now, there are some exceptions. Taking off challah, for example, may apply outside and the like. But for our purposes, we start off with a general rule that agricultural mitzvos only apply in Eretz Yisrael. They don't apply outside of Eretz Yisrael. So here's the question. Is there an isur of chadash on grain that grows in chutz la'aretz? If it's Israeli grain that's imported, for sure there would be. The fact that it's imported makes no difference. It's like truma, right? Peiros of Eretz Yisrael, the chayav in truma, even if they're imported. the issue of Chadash would certainly apply. But the question is, if it grows in Chutz La'aretz, whether it's a Jewish farmer or a non-Jewish farmer, is there an Isser of Chadash in Chutz La'aretz? Now, it's really a machlokes in the Gemara, machlokes Tanoim. And the machlokes is how to interpret the phrase the Torah uses by the Isser Chadash. This is in Parshas Emor. We're going to read about it in 2 weeks. The Torah uses about the Isser Chadash an unusual term. It says, b'chol moshvo seichem. This Isser of eating the new grain until the Omer applies in all of your moshavot, wherever you live. Now, it does not say that type of language by Shemitah, and it does not say that type of language by Trumas and Meisers. So what is the meaning of b'chol moshvo seichem? According to one opinion, it actually says, b'chol moshvo seichem, wherever you live, even chutz la'aretz. So the Torah is creating an exception. The Torah is actually telling me that the Isser of Chadash applies even in chutz la'aretz. That's one opinion. There is another opinion that goes the other way, that instead of b'chol moshvo seichem being machmir and extending the Isser Chadash to chutz la'aretz, it's actually giving you a leniency. Because as you know, when the Jewish people came to Eretz Yisrael, they did not immediately take control of the land. The Gemara tells us, based on Sefer Yoshua, that there were 7 years of fighting, of battles, kibush, and then it took another 7 years till the land was properly surveyed and divided and distributed to the tribes. So you could have waited 14 years till you got your portion of land. These are called Yud Dalet Shanim, Shel Kibush V'chiluk. So a perennial question that comes up in halacha very much is that when the Torah creates mitzvot tuluyot bi'aretz, do they take effect immediately upon our entry to the land, or only after the 14 years of kibush and chiluk? And each mitzvah is different. Some mitzvahs took effect immediately. Other mitzvahs had that 14-year gap. So the second interpretation of b'chol moshvo seichem means you're only chayav in chadash b'moshvo seichem when you are settled. Moshavot, when you are settled in your portion, and there was no Isser of Chadash during the 14 years of Kibush and Chiluk. So it turns out that in the Gemara itself, we have a big machlokas. If Moshvo Seichem is Marbe, the Isser of Chadash, in Chutz La'aretz, that's a Chumrah, or no, Chutz La'aretz, there's no Isser of Chadash, and the reference to B'chol Moshvo Seichem is to teach me that even in Eretz Yisrael, there was no Isser of Chadash until after the 14 years of Kibush and Chiluk, and during the first 14 years, they could eat the new grain even without bringing the Karban Omer. Now, by the way, that doesn't mean they didn't bring the Karban Omer. Bringing the Karban Omer is still a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to bring the Karban Omer, but it did not serve the matering function. All right, so we have a machlaikas in the Gemara. So there is a machlaikas haposkim, how to paskin. Now, there is a Ramah, and the Ramah basically says that Bizman Hazeh, now the Ramah lived in Poland in the 1500s. So when he says Bizman Hazeh, he's at least going back to the 1500s. By the way, the Ramah's yard site, by the way, is Lag BaOmer. It's a famous, it's actually a famous yard site. The Ramah died tragically and amazingly very young. He was in his early 40s, and yet he became the Rabban Shel Kol B'nei Agola in terms of being the Paisek for all the B'nai Ashkenaz. The Ramah writes that even though there is a shaila, if chadash is mutter b'chutz la'aretz, the Ramah says we can be mekel in eating all grain without checking if it's chadash or yashan. Now again, let me point out that obviously in this time of year between Pesach and Sukkot, there is no problem at all. Any grain that you have must have been planted before Pesach, either harvested before Pesach or planted before Pesach. So for sure, it is covered by the second day of Pesach, not a problem. But the Ramah writes, even after Sukkot, when potentially grain products have a chadash problem, you can eat and don't be worried about it. Aye, how can that be? Is there not a machlokas if the issur of chadash is no egg in chutz la'aretz? And if it is no egg, it might be an issur d'oraisa. And if it might be an issur d'oraisa, don't you have to be strict? So the Ramah says the following, a very, very famous Ramah and a very shver, very difficult Ramah. The Ramah says, we can eat grain that might be chadash based on the principle of what is called a double doubt. A double doubt means sveik sveika, meaning you have a doubt and then a doubt on top of a doubt. What is the double doubt? First of all, maybe the grain belongs to last year. Maybe it's old grain. Grain is often stored in silos, even for years. So even if you're getting it after Sukkot, maybe it's grain from a year ago, 2 years ago. That is one suffix. Maybe it's yashan. Maybe it's chadash. Now, if you only have one suffix, you'd have to be strict. But then the Ramah says, even if you want to be strict and say that it's not from the old grain, it is the grain that was harvested this year, but maybe it was planted before Pesach. So even if it was harvested this year, so it was harvested as new grain, halachically it would be old grain, because it was planted and it took root before Pesach. This is a doubt on top of a doubt. And because of a sveik sveika, the Ramah said that there's no isser of chadash in chutz la'aretz, meaning if you knew it was chadash, you'd have to be machmir. But what the Ramah is saying is, mitam sveik sveika, in all cases of doubt, you have the double doubt. Now, it's clear that the Ramah's Sveik Sveika can only be used in Chutz La'aretz, where there's a machlokas if the Din Chadash applies. In Eretz Yisrael, where it's Pashut that the Yisr Chadash applies, this Sveik Sveika cannot be relied upon. But as I say, your Hashkacha will take care of that. Now, let me point out that the Ramah's Sveik Sveika is the rule that is accepted by virtually all hashkachos in the United States. If you take the OU, you take the Chaf K, not all the hashkachos, but let's take the OU as the big one. The OU does not certify that the grain is yashan. So an OU certified product, again, it's not a problem now, it's not a problem between Pesach and Sukkot, but it'll be a problem for products after Sukkot. The grain product, the Entenmann's donuts, the cookies, the pasta, might theoretically be chadash, but the OU follows the Ramah that says you can eat it mitam sveik sveika. Right? So they follow the Ramah, which is, you follow the Ramah, certainly you could follow the Ramah. But I do want to point out that in recent decades, many, many, many people have been machmir not to be saimech on this Ramah because they treat chadash as a potential isser d'oraisa even in Chutz La'aretz. And as a result, some hashkachos have begun to be makbid on Yashan and Chadash. And there are also private organizations based on barcodes and the like that can actually identify the source of the grain. So you can go online and you can actually get a Chadash Yashan guide. Now, again, let me remind you, you can buy anything that's Chadash. And if you simply keep it in your house till the second day of Pesach, it'll become Yashan. All Chadash will eventually become Yashan after the Omer day. Of course, if it's Chametz, you'll have to sell it and everything else. So by definition, it's a temporary problem. So what a lot of religious people do is they buy, right after Pesach, they buy a whole warehouse of Chametz. They buy all of the grain products, the cookies and the pasta that they will want to eat in the course of the year. They buy it right after Pesach. And that is what they will eat later because they know for sure that that is Yashan, meaning they're not going to buy Chametz Sticka products after Sukkot, right? It's kind of a reversal of the conventional problem. A lot of people don't want to buy Chametz after Pesach because maybe it was owned during Pesach. But this is the opposite. I'm going to buy my Chadash after Pesach because I know it's not Chadash. And that will cover me during the Chadash problem period, which is after Sukkot. So again, if you go online, I don't want to get into all of the details, but people who are bucky in this can tell from a barcode, you know, what grain was used in the production, or some people don't bother with barcodes. They just store up everything after Pesach. The point I want to make though is that many, many, many B'nai Taira in Chutz La'aretz are makbid on Chadash, even though the Ramah himself was Mako. Because the emes is, the Ramah's Sveik Sveika, okay, I don't want to get too complicated, and I apologize if I've already crossed the line. But let me just point out that politically, the Ramah's Sveik Sveika is a very, very, very difficult Sveik Sveika. Because if you think about it, both Sveikos are one suffix. And that is, I got grain. I don't know if it's Chadash or Yashan. If it was planted before Pesach, it's Yashan. If it was planted after Pesach, it's Chadash. So the Ramah is splitting it up. The Ramah says, maybe it's old grain from last year. But even if it's new grain from this year, maybe it was planted after Pesach. That's really one suffix. In other words, it's one doubt. Was it planted before Pesach or was it planted after Pesach? To split it into two doubts and make it a double doubt leniency is very, very difficult because analytically, both doubts are the same question. Is it a pre-Pesach grain or is it a post-Pesach grain? And pre-Pesach means anything that was planted before Pesach. Whether it was harvested before Pesach or not is irrelevant. That's one issue. A second problem with the Ramah is that there's a klal that in order for a Sveik Sveika to be lenient, you have to have a double doubt no matter which order you raise the two doubts. I'll give you an example of that. Meaning the Sveik Sveika has to work. I have doubt number one. And even if I'm strict on doubt number one, I have doubt number two. But you also have to be able to say it the other way. I have doubt number two. And even if I'm strict on doubt number two, I'll have doubt number one. Meaning the Sveik Sveika has to be a double doubt no matter which order you use it. Now, if you think about this, this is a Sveik Sveika that only works in one sequence. In other words, Nachma, what is the Ramah's Sveik Sveika? First of all, maybe the grain was harvested last year before Pesach. So if that was the case, it's certainly Mutter now, after the Omer date. And even if it was harvested after Pesach, right? It's now Sukkot time. I'm sorry. Yeah, even if it was harvested after Pesach, maybe it was planted before Pesach. So it's still going to be good. Well, let's do it in reverse. First of all, maybe it was planted before Pesach. But even if it was planted after Pesach, well, wait a second. If you do it that way, there's going to be no leniency at all. So it's a svek sveka that is not reversible. And a svek sveka that's not reversible does not have the leniency of svek sveka. Be it as it may, the bottom line is relatively simple. The Ramah did give such a heter, but within the yeshivisha and chassidisha community, more and more people over the past few decades are much more machmer on this. Those of you that might be from Chicago know that Chicago in particular has a very long tradition of being makbid on the Isser of Chadash, and that is primarily because of the influence of Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Zichreino Livracha, as a brisker. The Shita of Brisk was very, very strict on the Isser of Chadash in Chutz Laaretz. So again, obviously people do what they do. I'm not here to tell anyone what to do, but I'm here just to inform you. But again, Baruch Hashem, you're in Eretz Yisrael. So on one hand, this whole machlokas is not relevant. For sure, there's an Isser of Chadash in Eretz Yisrael. So for sure, there's an Isser Chadash. But on the other side of the coin, because the Isser Chadash is Baror, the Hashgachos take care of it. So you actually have less to worry about. So the fact that the Isser is so unequivocal means it is folded into the Hashgacha. And therefore, as a practical matter, you do not have to worry about the Isser of Chadash in your product. Okay, so that is a little bit about Chadash and the role of the Omer in maturing the Chadash. Now, let me discuss for a moment an interesting number of psukim in Sefer Yahushua. If you remember, Moshe Rabbeinu died on the 7th of Adar, and the Jewish people mourned Moshe Rabbeinu for 30 days. They didn't go anywhere. They mourned in Arvos Moab, in the plains of Moab. They mourned Moshe Rabbeinu for 30 days. And after that time, Hashem came to Yehoshua ben Nun, who is now the leader of Am Yisrael, and told him, in 3 days, you are going to cross the Jordan River, the Yarden, and a great miracle will happen. So again, if you recall Sefer Yehoshua, the Jewish people crossed the Yarden on the 10th of Nisan, 33 days after Moshe Rabbeinu died. And of course, there was a great miracle, like Kriyas Yamsuf, the Yarden split, and B'nai Yisrael crossed the Yarden in a miraculous way. And they put up a monument of the stones. There were stones in the Yarden to memorialize that event. And there was also stones that were set up on land as well. Now, it then talks about the fact that there was a mass circumcision in order to bring the Korban Pesach, which is just 4 days later, on the 14th of Nisan. All of Am Yisrael, the men, had to have a bris. Why did they have to have a bris? So the Navi says, because although all of the people that left Mitzrayim had a bris milah, the children that were born in the desert did not have a bris milah. Why? Because it was considered to be a sakana to have a bris under traveling conditions. So all of the Jewish men, except Yehoshua and Kalev, who had left Mitzrayim, all the other men had died. All of the Jewish men needed to be circumcised. So it describes the mass circumcision. And after the mass circumcision, it describes the Korban Pesach that was brought, the first Korban Pesach that was brought in Eretz Israel. And then, catch, this is very important, the Navi is giving you these pivotal foundational scenes, the splitting of the Yarden, the circumcision of Am Yisrael, going into the covenant, the bringing of the Korban Pesach, which is a repudiation of idolatry. And then after the Korban Pesach, it says, Vayechlu me'avor ha'aretz mimacharas ha'pesach. The day after Pesach, ambiguous phrase, you'll see in a moment, the day after Pesach, they ate from the grain of Eretz Yisrael. They ate the grain of Eretz Yisrael from the day after Pesach. Meaning until that point, they were living on the man. The man stopped falling when Moshe Rabbeinu died. That's true. But you see, although the man normally did not, you could not preserve the man until the next day, it would spoil. But here, the Torah allowed the man to be preserved and kept for more than a month after Moshe Rabbeinu's death. So for the 33 days and plus, from Zion Adar until Macharas HaPesach, they were living on the man. And only Mimacharas HaPesach, I'm leaving the term untranslated for a moment, only Mimacharas HaPesach did they begin to eat the Tevuah of Eretz Yisrael. Now, here's the question. What is the phrase Mimacharas HaPesach? The day after Pesach. What is the day after Pesach? Now, B'chaira, I can bring you an excellent rule, a proof from the Torah itself, what Mimacharas HaPesach is. The Torah says in Parshas Masai, Mimacharas HaPesach Yatsu B'nei Yisrael Mimitzrayim. The Jewish people left Mitzrayim Mimacharas HaPesach. Now, what day did the Jewish people leave Mitzrayim? The 15th of Nisan. Right, we know that. And if the 15th of Nisan is described as Mimacharas HaPesach, then why is it called Mimacharas HaPesach? The 15th of Nisan is Pesach. The answer is Pesach is not a holiday called Pesach. Pesach is the bringing of the Korban Pesach, which is the 14th of Nisan. Ergo, Mimacharas HaPesach is the 15th of Nisan. In the Torah, that's clear. In the Torah, it's absolutely clear. Mimacharas HaPesach is the 15th of Nisan because Pesach refers to the bringing of the Korban Pesach. But here's the problem. Here's the problem. If you are going to make the very logical assumption that the term Mimacharas HaPesach in Sefer Yehoshua has the same meaning as Mimacharas HaPesach in Parshas Masai, which is a very logical assumption, you run into a problem because then the pasuk doesn't seem to make sense. Mimacharas HaPesach, on the 15th of Nisan, the Jewish people began to eat the grain of Eretz Yisrael. What is significant about the 15th of Nisan in terms of eating grain? I mean, Mimanavshach, if there's an Isser Chadash, it's going to last until the 16th of Nisan. If there's no Isser Chadash, they could have eaten the grain beforehand. So because of this, Chazal actually say, and it is a kasha, why the usage of the language is not the same as in the Torah. That is a good kasha. But Chazal concluded that the usage or the meaning of the phrase Mimacharas HaPesach in Sefer Yehoshua is not the same as Mimacharas HaPesach in Parshas Masai, And in Sefer Yehoshua, Mimacharas HaPesach means the 16th of Nisan, and Pesach is the holiday of Pesach, which is the 15th. So Mimacharas HaPesach is the 16th. Ah, so now we understand. When they came to Eretz Yisrael, they couldn't eat the grain because it was chadash, there was no Omer yet. So the earliest point they could have eaten the grain was when they brought the Omer offering of barley in the Mishkan at Gilgal. There was a Mishkan in Gilgal on the 16th. Now, let me point out that even that interpretation is not without problems, because you'll recall, I did mention a Mandiyamar that says the Isser of Chadash doesn't apply till after 14 years of Kibush and Chiluk. According to that opinion, there would be no Isser of Chadash. So why did they wait? Okay, Enochinami. But apparently, this Gemara's interpretation is following the view that the Isser of Chadash started right away. Okay, so this is a very interesting example, as Tosfos writes, Lashon Torah L'chud V'Lashon Nevi'im L'chud. And that is, the Nevi'im do not always use terminology the same way the Torah uses the terminology, which is actually very interesting. It's hard to understand. When the Torah says Pesach, it means the 14th, and Mimacharas HaPesach is the 15th. When the Navi says Pesach, he means the 15th, and Mimacharas HaPesach is the 16th. So, what is the Pasuk in Yehoshua telling me? So the Pasuk in Yehoshua is now telling me that the Jewish people did not eat of the new grains of Eretz Yisrael until the 16th of Nisan, when they brought an Omer offering in the Mishkan that was in Gilgal. Gilgal was the first camp when they crossed the Yarden. That's where they circumcised. That's where they brought the Korban Pesach, etc. Eventually, the Mishkan was in Shiloh. And of course, hundreds of years later, the Beis HaMikdash is in Yerushalayim. But at this very early point, the Mishkan is in Shiloh. Okay. Okay, I hope everyone is following me here. So now we have a very interesting question. The Talmud Yerushalmi points out that if it's true that they did not eat the new grain until the 16th of Nisan, then when they had a Seder and they brought their Korban Pesach on the 14th, and you have to eat the Korban Pesach with matzah and maror, how could they have fulfilled the mitzvah of matzah? You can't be yaitzei matzah with man, because man is not one of the five grains. You can only be yaitzei matzah with the five grains, wheat, barley, oats, rye, smelt. But if they couldn't eat from that new grain until they brought the Omer offering, and they can't bring the Omer offering until the 16th of Nisan, how could they be mekayim the mitzvah d'oraisa of matzah? So the Talmud Yerushalmi says a very amazing proposition. That very first Pesach, they did not fulfill the mitzvah of matzah. They had the Korban Pesach, but they did not eat matzah because of the Isser Chadash. Every other year, there's not going to be a problem because you'll have old grain that was covered by the preceding Omer offering. But when you're bringing the first Omer offering, everything is Chadash. So the Talmud Yerushalmi says, quite amazingly enough, that the very first Pesach that Am Yisrael was in the Midbar, I'm sorry, that Am Yisrael was in Eretz Yisrael, not the Midbar, Eretz Yisrael, they did not fulfill the mitzvah d'oraisa of Achilas Matzah b'erev teichlu matzah. That's a mitzvah d'oraisa. B'erev teichlu matzah. So then, The Talmud Yerushalmi asks a kasha, and it says, we have a general rule, and I think we've talked about this a number of times in different areas, that if the Torah gives you a negative commandment, and the Torah gives you a positive commandment, and the only way you can fulfill the positive commandment is if you transgress the negative commandment. So what do you do? If I keep the negative, I'm not going to do the positive. But if I do the positive, I'm going to transgress the negative. So what rule should I follow? So the famous rule that Chazal have based on different drushos is Aseh Docha Lo Sa'aseh. A positive commandment overrides a negative commandment. But again, let me emphasize, only if you have no choice, only if the only way I can do the positive is by transgressing the negative. One common example of this phenomenon is if a baby is born on Shabbos, a boy is born on Shabbos, so the eighth day from his birth is Shabbos. The halacha is that we do a bris on Shabbos. Now, a bris is technically a desecration of Shabbos. You're causing bleeding, etc. So every brit milah is an act of chilul Shabbos. And yet, since the Torah gives me a positive commandment of doing a bris on the eighth day, and the only way I could fulfill the positive commandment of doing a bris on the eighth day is if I do it on Shabbos, because Shabbos is the eighth day. So the rule is the positive overrides the negative. Now, let me explain. This is exactly why, if you think about it, if the bris is not on time, let's say you're doing a late bris. Let's say you're doing a bris on the ninth day, the 10th day. Let's say you're doing the bris when the baby is 1 month old. You cannot do that on Shabbos. You can only do an eighth day bris on Shabbos. You cannot do a ninth day bris on Shabbos. What's the difference? Because once I'm not doing it on the eighth day, I have a general mitzvah called Brit Milah. But that general mitzvah doesn't have to be Shabbos. I can do it some other day. So there's no need for the positive to override the negative, because you could do the positive without transgressing the negative by waiting a day. Masha Ein Kein, if Shabbos is the eighth day, the only way I could do that mitzvah is by transgressing Shabbos. So that's why it's Docha. This is called, again, Aseh Docha Lo Sasa. And the Ramban actually says in Chumash a very fascinating reason. Why doesn't Aseh have precedence over a negative? And he says, because positive commandments are ways you show your love for Hashem. Negatives, don't do something, is an act of fear, reverence, discipline. And since Avat Hashem is greater than Yirat Hashem, the actions of love override the prohibitions of fear. This is what the Ramban says in Parshas Yisra. So back to the Talmud Yerushalmi. The Talmud Yerushalmi therefore asks Akasha, the Navi Yehoshua says they did not eat the new grain of Eretz Yisrael until the 16th of Nisan. That means they did not eat matzah, Leil Seder, because there's an Isser of eating the Chadash until you bring the Omer. But wait a second here. We have a positive mitzvah of matzah. We have a negative prohibition. Thou shalt not eat the new grain until the Omer. But if the only way I could fulfill the positive is by transgressing the negative, because there is no other grain that's not Chadash, I don't have an alternative, then why don't I apply the same rule as a Shabbos bris? And let us say the Aseh is Docha the Lo Sasa. Right? Good kasha. This is the Talmud Yerushalmi. So the Talmud Yerushalmi gives two answers. One answer is a technical answer, and it's hard to know the origin of it. The Talmud Yerushalmi says that an aseh could override a lo sasa only when it was an aseh that was given at Matan Torah, like most mitzvos, you know, or after Matan Torah. But since the mitzvah of matzah was given before Maimed Har Sinai, it was given before Maimed Har Sinai, it's weaker. It doesn't have the validation, so to speak, of Maimed Har Sinai. It does not have the koach to override. Now, even though you'll ask me, well, Brit Milah itself was given before Mount Sinai to Avraham. Yes, that's true, but it was repeated after Har Sinai in last week's Parsha. Bayom HaShmini, Yimol B'sor Laso, Masha Enkein, the mitzvah of matzah was given only before Har Sinai. That is answer number one, and that needs some explanation, but that is what the Yerushalmi says. It then gives a surprising answer number two, and the answer number two actually says, min ha-Torah, they could have eaten matzah, Leil Seder, because of Aseh Docha Leisaseh, but Midrabanan, so this is a rabbinic decree from the time of Yahushua, Midrabanan, they said not to, lest you eat more than you need for the mitzvah. Because remember, there is an Isser of Chadash, and it's only set aside for the mitzvah. But once I ate my kezias, I would not be allowed to eat more than that. And the fear would be, once you start eating, you might eat more than the shi'or. So the Chachamim prohibited eating the first amount, lest you come to eat extra amounts. And therefore, it's only a midra bana. Okay, so the kitzer today, we can actually call this shir introduction to the counting of the Omer, because we didn't even talk about counting of the Omer. But I just want you to know that the term counting of the Omer should more accurately be called counting from the Omer, because Omer is not a period of time. We call this the Omer period, but Omer is not a period of time. Omer is a volume of grain that was brought on the second day of Pesach. So this is a svira from the Omer. And Mr. Shem, next week we will talk about the actual mitzvah of counting the Omer. One thing, though, that you need to keep in mind, and again, this is obvious, so I apologize if I'm telling you something pashut. Keep in mind that the mitzvah of counting the Omer and the various mourning restrictions, like not making weddings, that are connected to the Omer, have nothing to do with each other. The mitzvah of the Torah to count does not compel any type of mourning. Lehepech, as far as the Torah is concerned, this would be a happy time. So the avelus of Svira and the counting of Svira are two very, very different phenomena. One is from the Torah, and the other is from the Ga'anim, because of the later tragedies of the deaths of Rabbi Akiva. Okay, so next week, Yerushalayim, we'll continue with Sfiras HaOmer. I wish you all a good week, a Shavua Tov, a healthy week, and take care. Bye-bye.